Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I'm your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, get over here, Williams.
Yeah.
If you can't tell, we're going to be talking about the recently released Warner Brothers, HBO, whatever power team they're creating over there, released from them the latest iteration of the popular video game franchise, and that is Mortal Kombat. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you do a little kung fu verbiage and do the opening credits?
Okay. Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
I think that's the only sound I remember from my childhood from TV. Because of the Power Rangers.
Yeah, yeah.
More uniquely enough, from Jason David Frank. He sounded the exact same way. And it's funny. You would think, oh, it's got to be a recording. It's just recorded over and over. I have stood right next to the man, and he does it like mirror image, like each time.
That doesn't surprise me. That seems like the type of thing he'd have down.
Like, it's like he wakes up in the morning brushing your... those sounds. Like, I feel like that's what he does in the morning. He's so, like, energetic. It's crazy. But yeah, check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, mosey on over to our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We had a lot of great episodes this past year so far. We're about 4 months, almost 5 months into the new year. And a lot of great stuff for you to check out. So head over there if you can. Got a little choked up. We got a lot of great stuff over there, including a really great, awesome two-part review of Snyder Cut Justice League. So check it out, filmlosophers.com. But we are talking about the review today, and that is HBO Max's recently release of Mortal Kombat. Now, unless you've only been around for the last 15, not even, you know what? I don't even know. You had to have been living under a rock, essentially, to not know about Mortal Kombat. Whether if it's in the video game format or in the movies, the cult classic films, there's some sense of Mortal Kombat in any generation, pretty much. They recently released a new film for it, a new iteration of it in film form, and we saw it. And we're going to talk about it. So, without further ado, Spence, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
MMA fighter Cole Young, accustomed to taking a beating for money, is unaware of his heritage, or why Outworld's Emperor Shang Tsung has sent his best warrior, Sub-Zero, an otherworldly cryomancer, to hunt Cole down. Fearing for his family's safety, Cole goes in search of Sonya Blade at the direction of Jax, a special forces major who bears the same strange dragon mark. Oh, Lord, this is long.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Dragon mark Cole was born with. Soon he finds himself at the temple of Lord Raiden, an elder god and protector of Earth Realm, who grants sanctuary to those who bear the mark. Here Cole trains with experienced warriors Liu Kang, Kung Lao, and rogue mercenary Kano as he prepares to stand with Earth's greatest champions against the enemies of Outworld in a high-stakes battle for the universe. But will Cole be pushed hard enough to unlock his arcana, the immense power from within his soul, in time to save not only his family, but stop Outworld once and for all? Why even see the movie after that?
There you go. I mean, they're here to listen to it, so I'm pretty sure they're going to want to know all about the little nitty-bitties. Directed by Simon McQuad, in his feature directorial debut, the film stars Louis Tan, Jessica McNamee, Josh Lawson, Tadanobu Asano, Makad Brooks, Ludi Lin, Chin Han, Joe Talslim, and Hiroki Sanada. This is actually one of four films that have been made so far in the entire franchise that are feature films. Now, there are also like these short films, the collection of short films like the Mortal Kombat Legacy series that was two seasons, not to mention all the little cartoons here and there. But this is actually the second Mortal Kombat film to get an R rating in the U.S., with the first one being 2020's Mortal Kombat Legends Scorpion's Revenge. That one kind of surprised a lot of people that it was R rating. So, but we're talking about Mortal Kombat, and as you heard, it was the, as Spencer had put it before we went on the air, the dubstep version of that iconic song we all grew up with. First question, I guess I have to ask you, Spence, because we're talking about video games. What is your experience with the video game version of Mortal Kombat?
Ooh, not much. It's not a game that I really played as a child or even as a teen. I'm more familiar with how the totality of the ESRB exists because of Mortal Kombat.
True. That is so right. Like back in, what was it, 1993?
Four, around there?
It was about right around there. The Mortal Kombat video game extravaganza, if you will, debuted and made pretty much every single parent super upset. I'm sorry, it's a 1992 game.
Oh.
Yeah. But because that actually makes sense, because it first started as a arcade. What's that called?
An arcade cabinet?
There's I think it's a cabinet. I don't know. I think it's a cabinet game. But it was first that before it made the transition to console.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, SNES and was it Sega? Sega Genesis, probably?
Sounds about right.
That's when both of those got their own versions. And then, as you stated, the ESRB kind of was birthed out of angry moms and...
Well, it was more of the entertainment industry. It was like, oh no, they're coming. Let's scramble and put something together before they have time to make their own thing. And then they made that.
Yeah.
So that they could not be dictated by the law.
Which, because of that, Mortal Kombat, because of that, all games nowadays have that ESRB. And if you've grown up with that, you know how much it is a pain to explain to parents, oh, it's not really that bad. I know it's got this rating, but it's not that bad. So
I never had that problem.
Well, what did you ever buy, like a mature game? Or?
No, not with my parents. I bought that with my own money.
but it was because of this game, you're right, that really did set the stage for gore and bloodshed within the film. And honestly, it essentially then kind of also subsequently created other, like, gore versions of certain games and whatnot. Which, by the way, if you had ever noticed or you had never known, I owned a Sega Genesis. So I didn't know until, like, within the last 5 years that the SNES version didn't have a blood option. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh, those poor millennials. Like... Like, it was, you knew the code for the Sega Genesis as soon as you popped it in, put it in the code, and it just, like, blood and everything. And I within the last 5 years, I've gone on YouTube, and I've seen, I'm like, what do you mean there's a no-blood version?
Nintendo is very, very, like, standing over all the games on their system, being like, if there's so much as a speck of blood.
Nope. That was doing the most. I thought that was pretty intense. But... ergo, we digress, as after, what is it, almost 30 years of...
Ugh. Thanks for that. Ugh.
Yes. We just aged ourselves. After almost 30 years of blood and guts and spine pulling and heart ripping, we've had the opportunity in our lifetime to be able to see at least four of these movies. I don't know if you got a chance to see Scorpion's Revenge.
I saw none of the movies. This is my first one.
You didn't see Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat Annihilation?
Mm-mm. I've heard stories about those.
Wait, hold on. Hodor. What do you mean you didn't see the first two?
I just told you I didn't have much experience with the video games. So when the movies came out, I didn't really care.
I mean, okay. This is like blowing my mind. I've never met anybody who hadn't seen the movies yet.
I don't know what to tell you. We exist.
Who hurt you? I'm sorry. You need to let me know these things so I can take you. Here, go ahead. Watch the movie. It's okay. Well, the first two movies. Okay, so just to kind of set the stage, the first two movies are like two different sides of the same coin. Okay? The first side is actually decent. It's good. You have the incredible Christopher Lambert, who I don't know if you know who Christopher Lambert is, but he is the man who did Highlander. Very, very regal-looking type of actor. By the way, this film actually marks the first time Raiden is actually played by an Asian person.
Oh, God.
Because the first one was Christopher Lambert. The second one was that...
Wait, this guy played Raiden?
Now I'm searching. Here we go. It gets worse because Christopher Lambert played that one. James Remar played the one in the second movie. They changed the character from the first film to the next film. Mm. And... James Remar is no Raiden. So like I said, the first film was decent. It was decent. It was about an actual tournament. There was an actual puppet standing Goro that they were using in the film. And it was actually halfway decent. I mean, it was definitely rough looking according to nowadays standards, but back then you're like, oh, that's not bad, you know. And you had the whole plethora of characters in it. You know, you had Johnny Cage, you had Liu Kang, you had Sonya Blade, you had Katana, Kano, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Reptile was in it. You had a good list of folks. And likewise, I think some of them actually died in the second one, the Annihilation one. So coming to full circle almost to now, I'm sorry. The flip side of that coin, second one was horrible.
Yes.
Some of the worst lines and dialogue you could ever imagine. And what's one of those things? There's a character named Shiva. I think it's Shiva. Oh, no, Sindel. There's a character named Sindel who is the mother of Kitana. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so, in the second film, which is supposed to technically take place immediately after the end of the first film, yet you change characters like, you know, Raiden.
Oh, yeah. You take a 5-minute break, change her face.
There's a line where Sindel pops out, and Kitana, who hasn't seen her mom in ages, is like, "Mom, you're alive." And she goes, Sindel goes, "Yes, but soon you will not." And I'm like, "What? No."
Sounds amazing.
Oh, it was horrible because this was the one that actually, this movie, the second one was the one where they had like the really funky CGI characters in it at the end that are battling, like the dragons, quote unquote, between Liu Kang and who's the main bad guy? Oh, Shao Kahn. Shao Kahn's the main bad guy in that one. It's really bad. So I say all that to say, mm-hmm. jump forward about, you know, from 97 till 2021, and we get Mortal Kombat, like we said, released through HBO and Warner Brothers. I think the biggest thing for me is my full area of exposure to the video games. I've always loved the video games. Mm. Almost. There's a few that just really kind of was like, what are you guys doing? Like, there was this one version where it was you actually moved through like the castle and you fought things.
Mm-hmm.
Very much kind of like a Streets of Rage kind of like a format. The controls were all wonky. you couldn't go up. You had to go to the right, and you had to go sideways. And when you fought, your directional thing, like, it was just like, do, 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 punch, punch, kick, punch, punch, kick. Yeah.
That sounds confusing.
It was super confusing. And then they did the ridiculous DC versus Mortal Kombat, or Mortal Kombat versus DC, which had dumbed down a lot of what Mortal Kombat was at the time, and kind of watered it down with what DC was only allowed to do, which they weren't really allowed to do much in terms of gruesomeness. But a lot of what they did that was gruesome was kind of like off-camera things. It was a horrible game, and I really wish I hadn't played it. And then they did do a redux of it in... I'm trying to find the year... 2011. Now, this one was like... was probably the best thing to happen to Mortal Kombat since ever. Because this is the one that began introducing like different elements of different types of fatalities, different ways to attack your other player. You could do this ultimate move during the middle of the game, not at the end, that could show... it would show like the exact crushing of what would happen to the other player, the other player's character, things like that. It was actually...
I've seen bits and pieces of that. That's cool.
Yeah, and that one was a great game. And that started in 2011. And honestly, ever since then, it's only grown in that format. Like, it's not the same game, but the same style of it kept moving it forward.
Right.
Which I believe that was due to it changing hands in terms of studio. I'm not too sure. But either way. So I'm aware of the game for the most part. The problem is that I kind of fell off lately when they started adding like, oh, you could add the Predator. You could add Terminator. You could add Freddy Krueger. Like, it started getting a little hokey, and it just was getting too much. Not to mention, I could see an EA play when I know it, and they're just looking to grab money out of DLC content left and right. So I'm like, I'm good. EA games, I know your tricks.
It's not a loot box. That's all I can say.
Oh no! There was a loot box program.
Never mind. Way back.
It was horrible. It was so bad. I don't even remember when that was, but nevertheless. Coming to where we are now, this particular movie is definitely not like any other Mortal Kombat that we've seen so far. And maybe for good reasons, maybe for not good reasons, I don't know. But your expectations going into it, Spence?
Like almost zero. I wasn't, well, mostly I was just hearing like word of mouth stuff about it, where most people were either like, or some people were like, and so trying to translate those sounds into something useful, I was like, well, maybe this movie will be like, you know, all rightish. Yeah, so that's kind of what I was coming into this. What about you?
You know, honestly, I saw the trailers. I saw the Red Band trailer, and thankfully, Red Band trailer didn't have any nudity. It was just a lot of blood. Which I don't know if that just speaks more to me or to the trailer, but like, I wasn't desensitized or anything. It's just nothing happening in that commercial, in that trailer. And I saw it and I was like, okay, so Mortal Kombat has been on this kick of humanizing, and if not humanizing, giving some type of justification for Scorpion's arc, whether it be the games, the later games, or even Scorpion's Revenge, the cartoon animated film, and now this, because that's kind of where that beginning fight scene that's in the trailer is actually part of the fight scene in the beginning of the movie. So you're like, okay, you're gonna do this. My biggest expectation was, I was hoping to see what the connection was with the new character in the overall film and why was he important. Mm-hmm. Because let's be honest, if you're looking at Mortal Kombat, there's already a ton of characters within that universe that they could definitely use as part of kind of the launching pad, the springboard, if you will, to kind of get a series going or get a film series going. Bringing in Cole, which, quick note, I just saw this a little bit ago, Spencer. This is the second film in a row that we've reviewed a film where the main character's name was Cole. So,
what?
Last week's the kid's name was Cole.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Cole Train? Cole?
Cole Train's from freaking Gears of War.
Hey, that's what he's called. but I wanted to make sure that this wasn't just going to be some kind of ruse. It was actually going to be a good movie, because, like I said, there hadn't been a great track record with Mortal Kombat films, not to mention video game movies in general.
Yeah.
Like, if we're talking, if we're talking like probably the worst adaptations out there, it's video game movies.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how much the director or the producer is going to promise, like, oh, it's going to be different, it's going to be better, it's going to be huge. Whatever they say, it's all a lie.
Anyone says anything like that, I'm like, I'm not watching.
I'm like, I'm turning you off right now. But everybody who says that, you're like, okay, cool. Like, we thought that about some of the first Resident Evil films, and they kind of got a little hokey. The first one was okay, but everything else after that was like, ah. They said that about the Assassin's Creed movie, and that didn't go anywhere. I was like, eh. Like, it's becoming more and more difficult to not have a hope for a video game movie.
Right.
Mortal Kombat is one of the cream of the crop examples as to a bad film adaptation. As we mentioned, the Mortal Kombat film, it's entertaining. The first one, 1995 or 1994, whatever, it's entertaining. That's 95, but it's not perfect. It's not like cohesive enough for it to hold as a solid film. We're not even going to talk about the second one, because the second one was just a junkyard heap. So it's hard to look at a film and expect, if you tell me it's going to be an adaptation of a video game, it's hard for me to hold hope nowadays, especially after our conversation the other day when you and I were sitting down. And we were talking about like some of the worst video game adaptations, and we kind of got into the trail of Uwe Boll, and
that guy.
Ah, that man.
If you don't remember this guy, Uwe Boll was the director who would occasionally fight his critics.
Yeah, in a boxing ring, he would verbally assault his critics. He would have Twitter wars with other people. He would block people even if they didn't have like the slightest inclination of supporting him. Like, it became eerily obvious this man valued his self-image to the point to where he had no problem making himself look like a jerk all over the internet. So when it comes to video game movies, he's got a couple under his belt that just are not good at all. It's like, okay, I get it. You're wanting to make money. I hear you. Please stop. You're ruining my childhood. Like, I have no problem telling him that to his face, because the man just... He blocked me on Twitter at one point in time, so I'm not, you know...
I know that's a bad honor on your part.
but that's the thing, though. That's kind of the pariah, if you will, of, like, video game movies. I think a lot of us are wanting to see a character in a video game movie. We're wanting to see a character who's going to do exactly what we want them to do, because that's what we're typically used to. And so now someone else is kind of at the helm, and nobody likes being the second player. Nobody likes being the person sitting next to the person playing.
Right.
So I don't know if that's a part of the psychology of why we haven't found a good video game movie, or maybe it's...
Well, I think part of it's like condensing it down is part of the issue, because when you're talk about Assassin's Creed,
yeah,
that's an 80-hour plus game. You're not going to condense all of that down into 2 hours.
Yeah,
like, that's really a tall order. And even like, let's talk about Avatar, the Last Airbender movie. They tried to condense 26 episodes into a 2-hour movie. You can't condense something that is that huge into something that's understandable for just 2 hours.
I'm going to be brutally honest with you. I saw the movie, but it was so boring to me. I fell asleep like maybe halfway through the second act.
Mm-hmm.
And all I remember is that last scene where he's, you know, bending water. And I'm like, yeah, I should have stayed asleep. Like,
I went and saw it in the theater with John O and Eli, actually. And like, I have never seen John O look so angry.
I believe it. I believe it.
And also, like, Eli left and went, like, had a conversation with someone in the lobby for like 10 minutes.
There you go. That makes a lot of sense.
I found the movie hilariously bad because I was like, it was baffling. Baffling that they would make those choices.
I don't even know if they were choices. They were just like suicidal thoughts. Like, okay, we got
let's make all these Asian influence actors.
Exactly.
White.
That's the biggest
let's
thing.
Let's make all the bad people people of color.
Yeah.
Why?
Oh yeah. 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 It's like, there's a conscientious decision here that I don't know if anybody's gonna want to say it out loud, but it is an elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna, it's an oppa in the room, and I'm not definitely gonna, you know, I'm not gonna call it out, but yeah, so it's just, it's hard to see somebody take something, I guess what it boils down to is what you're saying is, it's really difficult to take something that has been almost like 80 to 90 hours worth of content, mm-hmm. at least, and condense it into like a 2 hour, 2.5 hour film or project and be able to, you know, have the gist of it get conveyed properly. And I think that's a big truth. Because when it comes to video games, I mean, think of it this way, Spence. One of yours and mine, my favorite franchises is the Legend of Zelda series.
Oh, yeah.
There are, like, at least 10 games, at least, in the whole franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different chapters of different parts of Link's journey throughout
don't
all of this.
Get into the complicated story that Zelda is.
Yeah. And you take all that and you're like, and someone's like, oh, I'm going to make Legend of Zelda movie.
No.
And it's like, you're not. I don't think you can. No.
No.
Like, you,
you'd have to answer such high-level questions that the general audience isn't going to care about.
Yeah.
And fan boys and girls will roast you about.
Without a doubt.
It's not worth it. Not worth your time.
I mean, if you're going to, so here's the thing. If you have a fandom that you want to create something, create it on your own, first and foremost. Like, go out. Go find some actors. Go put some of your money into it. Create a short film. Make a pitch. If it works out, then cool. Hey, you know what? Your pitch was great. Make your short film. Throw it on YouTube. Throw it on Vimeo. Charge people $6 to see it. Whatever you want to do. But if you're going to take a beloved franchise and chop it up to where only the, like, smallest parts of the entire franchise are noted in a 2.5 hour time frame, you're gonna get, like, you're gonna get backlash. You're gonna get problems. You're gonna get people who are, like, extremely upset because you're gonna miss that one scene that somebody really liked in part 4 or part 2 or anything. Like, I don't know. It just seems like it's a really huge and almost uncalculated risk, because if you calculated it, it would make sense to just not do it.
Yeah.
Now, if there was an inspired film, like, there's things like that. Like, if you're going to create a whole different storyline, you're like, this is not an adaptation. This is an inspiration from the Super Mario Brothers. So this is an inspiration from Doom. I mean, we've seen several different inspirations from the Doom franchise. You know, Wolfenstein, you got Duke Nukem, you got all these things. And same thing with, you know, your shoot 'em up games, your Western games, things like that. Like, if you get something that's inspired, that's a different story. By all means, do your best. See if it inspires you, and it may inspire me. Who knows? But if you're going to be like, oh, this is going to be the best, you know, adaptation to this video game ever since, you know, the dawn of man and the dawn of cinema, you're going to have to check it out. Oh my gosh, this is just going to blow your...
Oddly enough, I could see someone thinking that.
Oh, yeah.
They probably have a shot of being correct, technically.
I mean, yes and no, because here's the problem. Too many people think their opinion on what should be translated is the ultimate opinion.
True.
And that's the problem with an opinion. Opinions are like buttholes. Everybody has one.
Okay.
It doesn't mean everybody wants to see it. That's what I'm saying. You know, everybody may have an opinion on their own. You know,
I feel like there was a better way to phrase that.
Not even. Not even. I mean, there's a worse way, but
No, I'll take the
But this is an arena that takes a deeper conversation to kind of just examine it, because I think there has to be some like psychological breakdown as to why we have yet to find a successful video game adaptation. Because to be honest, I would personally like to see one. I would like to see somebody do one right. Whether if it's through the inspiration route or it's through, you know, however, like they do it in a series. I actually used to think the first season of the Mortal Kombat Legacy series was done really well. Had really well-known actors, very high-caliber performers, like actual actors and actresses who could do some of the stunts that they were doing in the films, in the little short films. I thought it was a good inspired piece. Now you look at everything else nowadays, and even the things before, they're trying to recreate what we've played throughout 80 plus hours of gameplay. I don't know, there's got to be psychology behind it, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's I feel like probably the best course of action is just not try with a movie and do like maybe like a limited run series instead. Because I feel like a lot of the problems with converting all this stuff is you sticking to 2 hours is just too hard.
Yeah, I agree. So I guess jumping back to the movie with Mortal Kombat, after you saw the film, so because like I said, we're gonna have to save the conversation about video game movies and so forth for another day, because it's a really big conversation. I mean, yeah. Let's be honest, just kind of coming back to this one more time, it's a really big conversation, and there's a lot of things that are needed to be said and dove into, but we just need more time, you know, to kind of really. So hey, that's a future episode if I ever knew one. So, but talking about this one, what were your first impressions after seeing the movie, like your very first impressions?
They set up so many rules in this movie and then kind of just sidestepped a lot of them. Like, there was like, Mortal Kombat is coming, we have to get ready, blah, blah, blah. And then they get into all these fights, the movie's over, and I'm like, wait, didn't Mortal Kombat actually not happen? Wasn't this a whole bunch of side quests that we just did in this movie?
Yes.
Because this is a side quest movie. That means that they still have Mortal Kombat coming.
Yeah.
In like a couple of weeks, days. They're very vague on that. And so if they do follow up, it's the actual Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
It wasn't even in this movie. And it's just such an insane decision to me that like you're going to. It's all about Mortal Kombat. It's not in this movie.
Yeah. No, I the movie literally ended and I'm like, when's Mortal Kombat? When's the tournament? Like it built up all these great anticipation moments, and it just kind of fell flat.
Yeah,
on every part. Like you're like, okay, all right. Like the first fight in the film is the first earnest and like kind of fully like come circle fights in the whole movie. Because you have resolution. You have resolution out of that first fight. You have this person who they established as one person. Then this other guy comes in, kills everybody. They fight. He kills him. And that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And it's a great fight scene. Yeah, the first fight scene, which is the one in the trailer. It's in the film. And you're like, okay, all right, yeah, okay, yeah. As soon as that scene was over, I'm like, okay, yeah, I could do this. Come on, for almost 2 hours, I could do this for 2 hours. And I'm like sitting there, and I'm eating my salad, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, I'm dropping pieces of lettuce with this whole fight. I'm like, oh, shoot, you throw that thing. Okay. By the way, I saw a lot of Mad TV over the weekend, and one of the skits that stuck out was the guy, can I have your number?
Oh my gosh, that one?
Can I get the digits to your number? Okay, that Yvonne, that's a fringe ass name. Okay. I was like, Oh man, I had fun. But that first scene had me so hyped, and then the very next fight scene is the main character getting his butt whooped in a cage match for $200.
This was the guy we were stuck with for the rest of the
movie. Yeah, and he looks like the dude from Independence Day. I had to look him up a couple times.
No, see, this guy reminded me of some other actor, and I knew he wasn't the same one, but it was driving me crazy the whole movie. I'm like, who is he reminding me of? Because they have like a very similar facial structure.
Yeah, it's the other kid from Independence Day.
I think it's a different guy. I don't know.
No, I'm telling you that because I remember how much you talk about Independence Day. And
I was like flipping through like what old movies I'm trying to remember.
Because I remember him in a more recent movie. Because you know what he looks like? Here he is.
No, I was thinking of someone different.
Because he almost looks a little like the guy from Deadpool 2. Mm-hmm. The guy who's an alien or whatever, who gets chopped up by the blade helicopter propellers. I thought it was this guy. It wasn't. It's the other guy that's in this movie, Cole, or whatever heck this guy's name is. I gotta look at my notes. what was his name? Louis Tan. Yeah, Louis.
Yeah,
Tan.
That's his name.
Yeah, I was this movie, I was amped up. That first fight had me amped. I was like, okay, yeah, all right. Let's get some real fighting up in here. Okay, gonna do better than the first two. And then as soon as I said, oh, our human punching bag, oh, crap.
I was like, here we are.
Yeah, get into the ring, and he does well, and then boom. I'm like, oh, okay. This movie sets up a lot of unique opportunities. However, story structure-wise, there's a couple of issues I had. And all in all, I felt like I was still in line waiting for the movie to happen. You know? Which, I mean, hey, HBO Max, thank you for reminding me what it felt like to wait in line at the movies, because that's what this movie was. It's just one long wait. It had potential, but it wasted a lot of different opportunities to create something bigger than itself later down the road. And I don't care if you want to chalk it up to COVID or if you want to chalk it up to, you know, filming restrictions, whatever. If you're going to put out a movie, what I expect is this movie to be the best iteration of what you could have done. Now, film studio interjections, things like that, I know, obviously, those are things that we can't handle, we can't fix. However, if you tell me this is my, you know, magnum opus for Mortal Kombat, or this is my whatever, this is, I expect this to be, I mean, especially if it's put out by HBO. I mean, HBO Max has been toting themselves to be like, oh, the be-all, end-all of streaming services. Yeah. And this movie... Yeah. Just, I don't know, man. It fell flat for me.
This movie made me constantly question, what are the rules of Mortal Kombat? Like, I need to see a rule book, because right? Things are just flying left and right. It's like, well, we have beaten them 9 times. We only need to beat them one more. Then why are you even bothering to invade them when you're just going to invade them when they lose? Because yeah, they're going to probably lose. You have not, like... Why are you so worried about this? Has something happened on your side? I feel like there's a backstory to them, the bad guys, where I'm like, I'm not getting why you're like, we have to do this now. Like, there's a time limit for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on with you?
Yeah, and another big thing was like, okay, I get it. The tournament everybody made it seem like the tournament was imminent. Like, it was just around the week. And even Lord Raiden was like a jerk. Like, oh, you have no potential. We don't have time. It's like...
You remind me of Master Splinter with that voice.
Umato Yoshi. Oh, that hurt. It kept creating these moments where it's like, oh, but Shang Tsung, won't we be breaking the rules? And the Elder Gods be mad. Let me deal with the Elder Gods. And they literally show up at an Elder Gods temple... And it's like,
I'm like, Why, Raiden, go tell the... Where are the Elder God police, right? Or whatever? Who's enforcing these rules?
It didn't make any sense.
Also, like, it just... I'm trying to understand the logic of the movie. And so, apparently, if you win 10 times in a row, Mortal Kombat, you get to invade the other realm that you're fighting... Which makes me think, so if Earth had won 10 times, it's does like that mean they get to invade the outer worlds if they want to?
It's like a Subway punch card. The 10th sub is free. Here, if you beat us 10 times, you get your 10th one for free.
Your free invasion? Like, what?
I don't even, it's weird because it's a battle that nobody's even aware of. So, yeah. Like... I don't know. There was all these images on the wall at one point in time. It's like, oh, this is Mortal Kombat, the past of Mortal Kombat, or whatever. And I'm like, you know, if there was at least 10 past ones, that's not really a lot, but I guess. I mean, how often do those things happen? Is it since the beginning of time? Are we looking at like every 2,000 years or every 100 years? Like, how can you have people marked if... It's like there's no... They're not even going to be alive when the tournament happens.
And also, many, many questions about this marking process.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I have a million questions about the marking process. It's like, okay, so it's like, here, if you shoot me, you get this mark. But then it's like, then there's a lineage for some of them. So
like,
what if somebody was part of a lineage who got the mark... who was really sucky at fighting. Like, he just wanted to open up his own ice cream shop, and yet he's, like, marked to fight in this battle.
Yeah, you're still it. That's what it makes it sound like. But, like, there's a whole bunch of, like, what happens when you have multiple siblings? Do they each get one, or does only one, the first one, get one?
Or what happens if somebody actually gets, like, dies, and then the thing transmits over to somebody else, and then they revive him, and he comes back? Does he have to get the thing back? Or
he has to get it back. But then also, later on in the movie...
It's like the worst version of Hot Potato here. Like, nobody wants it, but then everybody who has it is like, all right, I guess I gotta do it.
And there's something in this movie where the part where Scorpion comes back... How did he come back? I honestly don't understand that bit. Because he was dead. He is dead. And he... conquered hell in the time he was dead and then was allowed to come back, and now they're making it sound like everyone, like, death is meaningless for the fighters because they're all coming back for the Mortal Kombat ? It's because, yeah, if death is meaningless, doesn't that mean that this movie has no stakes going forward? Because if you're dead, come walk back.
Like, oh, yeah. You know, yeah, Scorpion does, like, guided tours down in hell, yeah. And is like, you know, oh, you want your way back to the top? Here, follow me. $25. Okay.
Yeah. So, really, I just need a Mortal Kombat rule book. Since you're more familiar with the property, does any of that pull from anywhere else where, like, if you win 10 times, you get a reality?
Well, the thing is that Earth, the realms were always at stake.
Why, actually?
Because outer world, there's Earth realm, mm-hmm. There's the outer realm, and then there's the nether realm. And all of these realms are in this battle. Now, because Lord Raiden has always been here, he has always cultivated the better fighters and ultimately kept things at bay. But Shang Tsung, who actually is a sorcerer, has decided that he wants to take over everything. So he pretty much helps create an army and other warriors and essentially have them come to the next Mortal Kombat because essentially each Mortal Kombat, all the realms are at stake. Like every time. Not just like, you know, 10th punch is free. This is like every Mortal Kombat is a battle for the realms. Uh-huh. So... And there's a lot of things, you know, in the mythos, if you will, of the characters, like, you know, Melina and Katana and, you know, and like we mentioned, Sindel and Shiva and people like Liu Kang and Kung Lao and all these different other people. who are all over the entirety of the game. And mind you, there are a couple of really good iterations in this movie, I have to admit. I liked the iteration of Cabal. Cabal was pretty much on point as he was in the video game. He's very fast, has those two things. The Arcana interjection. I know it's a part of the video games, but I don't know if it's like, I think it's part of the building up of that special ability to do that ability that breaks bones and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's necessary for you to be able to use the powers. And I don't think that's actually a part of the storyline of people finding their abilities through their Arcana. And that's a broken, that's a totally broken moment in the film as well. Because, so according to the film, each character is capable of tapping into their superpower, as Kano wonderfully put it, their super ability. And so once you have the mark, number one, and then you train in the temple, or you train, I don't know, as Bruce Lee would say, more emotional content. Like, maybe that's what they were, you know, kind of touching on. Then that person can tap into their Arcana and create their ability, you know? I don't think that's a part of the game mythos. And I think that's a super broken thing in here, because we get an instance where, so everybody pretty much in the movie has the symbol on them.
Right.
Cole has it because it's passed down from his lineage.
Right.
Jax has it because he killed somebody in South America who had it. Which I don't know who that could have been, to be quite honest. But either way, he killed somebody for it, and now he has it. And Kano has it because they were tracking somebody, and Kano got there first, slit the guy's throat, and he took his symbol. The only person who does not have a sigil on them is Sonya Blade.
Right.
So, like any other good, you know, misogynistic film, Sonya Blade is kind of pushed to the outside. It's like, you can't play with us because you're not one of us, kind of thing. And that was a little kind of odd, first off, for me. It's like, oh, the movie at the beginning was like, oh, we'll go ahead and, you know, make it difficult for you as a woman to succeed. Everyone else who's a female in this movie is either subservient to the main guy or non-existent, or you're a pilot who talks about dead moms with Kano. But at the tail end of the movie, well, spoiler alert, Sonya ends up killing somebody who has one, gets the symbol on her, and immediately within like 5 minutes of the next scene, she shows up and she's already able to use her like arm gauntlet things.
Yeah, that was incredibly fast. I don't know why they didn't just like slap a sigil on her and she just didn't know how to use it like the rest of the cast until like they got to the temple. Yeah. Like, it doesn't really change terribly much. Although it probably does interject like this interesting new question about the sigil transfer. What happens when you kill someone who already has one? Do you get two? If you get killed,
you get double powers.
That actually be kind of cool.
This movie though has a lot of broken things. Like, you take for instance the ability to, I don't know how what you call it, how Raiden's powers work, mm-hmm. but for somebody who's not supposed to be helping humans, he does it pretty much from the very beginning.
There's no rules. Like, there's rules, but there's no rule enforcement. Do whatever you want. That's why they're being invaded already, and why Raiden's just helping out when he can.
I had mentioned earlier the brokenness, if you will, of the story. One of my biggest issues with this film, one of my biggest pet peeves, is kind of foretelling what could be a really big possible ending or a big match at the end, and then using that could have been bigger as kind of like not to the fullest extent. And let me explain. We get this instance where you have Shang Tsung is talking to Melina, and they're like, oh, you know, Sub-Zero is already, you know, on the hunt for the other Earth Realm champions, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, okay, you know, we're building whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you look in the distance and they're walking towards this massive statue of Goro, the four-armed, you know, fighter from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You go back to the film and he shows up at the house, Goro, at the house of the one guy who does not know how to fight. He doesn't know how to fight. Like, it makes no sense. Why send the guy who could probably do the most damage to everybody to the one guy's house who could who would probably die within an instance if it weren't for movie magic?
See, that's actually the one part I was like, well, that's a smart decision. Because, like, normally in, like, moves where you need to attack the weak one, they always send someone else who's weak. Send someone who's strong just in case something weird happens. And well, guess what? Something weird happens.
But the thing is this, is that you could have used Goro as, like, a final boss type of character for this whole situation.
Yeah.
Because if he's somebody who they're, like, they're all excited. Like, you should have seen in that scene when Shang Tsung sees Goro come through the gates of his kingdom, and he's like, Goro, we're so happy to have so-and-so's blood within our blah blah blah, like, so excited to see him. It's like, okay, they're gonna use him for something big. Turns out wasn't really that big at all.
No.
I mean, he got his butt whooped. Yeah. And that's the last we see of him.
Yeah, till the next movie.
Well, if there is gonna be a next movie,
and they're low on content.
This movie really plays fast and loose with the rules, with consistency and logic.
Yeah.
Because it's very interesting that, you know, you have somebody like Sub-Zero, who isn't typically a more skilled fighter than anybody else. However, in this film, Sub-Zero is like super assassin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the one who kills everybody, apparently. And it feels kind of out of balance if you have Sub-Zero constantly throughout this film and Scorpion's not. Because those are the two kind of like the yin yang of the entire franchise. You look at that, both of them, they're on the opposite sides of the spectrum. I mean, the very first game, they're ultimately the same character, just different color palettes and moves. And it's weird to see Sub-Zero constantly in every other film. By the way, this is not a weird thing to say, but Sub-Zero's eyes were really weird. Like, his eyes constantly looked like he was about to cry. Like, he looked very sad as Sub-Zero. Like, someone is forcing him in this outfit to perform. But then he speaks and it's like, oh, okay. But it's like, I look at him like, poor guy. Like, does he need water? Somebody needs to bring him water. But it seemed a little imbalanced. And the appearance of Scorpion in the film, because it's in the trailer. This isn't a spoiler thing. It is in the trailer, so I'm not going to tell you where it's at. But the appearance of Scorpion in it doesn't really feel like it pays off well. Because it seems like, oh, he's in it, and then he's gone. Are we going to see him again? Who knows?
Sequel.
You know, a lot of the weird choices in here were just so they could set up a sequel. But yeah, the thing about Scorpion for me was, like, the color contacts they gave him, did not like those.
Yeah.
I don't know why. They just bothered me a lot.
It's true. But here's the thing. Hiroyuki Sanada he's an incredible martial artist and actor. He was in, like, I'm sure you've seen The Wolverine.
The
one where he's in Japan?
Yeah, no. I didn't see any of those side X-Men movies.
Did you ever see any of the Daredevil movies or Daredevil shows?
Yeah.
He's the one who's the leader of the Hand.
Oh, okay.
So he's like one of the people that they, him and what's her name, Elektra fight on the rooftop. He's a great actor. He's a great performer. He was in, I believe he was in one of the Raid movies. He was, you know what I first saw him in was that Tom Cruise movie, The Last Samurai. He was one of the, obviously the samurai in that movie. But he's always been an incredible actor and an incredible performer. So having him in this film be the iconic character, I believe he's actually the oldest person to portray Scorpion in the films. Because I believe he's like in his 50s. Yeah. But either way, the dude can still, you know.
Yeah, no. He was really cool to watch, actually, throughout
the movie. Was. Like, in that first fight with him and, like, everybody, I would earnestly believe this man could kill me. Like, looking at him, I would be like, yeah, I don't want to get on his bad side. You know, I don't want to step on his shoes. Because it looks like he would probably have a pen in his pocket and stab it into my neck. plain and simple. But the appearances that he has throughout the film, they're not really fulfilling. I mean, he's good as the character of Scorpion. You're right, the contacts did look a little off. I think it was just an issue with contacts altogether, because his contacts didn't look right, Sub-Zero's contacts didn't look right. And it just seemed like it moved, but it didn't. You know what I'm saying? Because like they make this huge journey, this huge trek all the way to this place in the mountains, and then in an instant everybody's elsewhere, and it's like, well, I mean, that kind of diminishes the journey. Does that mean that Lord Raiden could have gone and, you know, picked him up?
But he's basically the interdimensional taxi service.
Yeah, and without a doubt. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, why are they okay, he's back at home. Okay. And then it's like, oh, in an instance, oh, he's, I guess he's in the outer realm, like outworld, whatever. Like, I don't know where people are at. They're just not here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I have to admit, some of the fighting scenes were decent.
Some of them were actually had cool like concepts in them.
Yeah.
Like, especially there was this one where, Sub-Zero's fighting someone, he like stabs him and like blood goes flying out and he like freezes the blood and stabs him again.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a cool idea. Well, I like that idea.
Well, and here's the thing. At least you know that person was hydrated because there was water in that man's blood. I don't even know. The fight scenes were decent. Obviously the ones with like CG, they were okay. Hands down, the best scenes was the first and the last one. And those, they felt like the performers who were in it, because here's the problem that I have. Here's the biggest thing. I'm trying so hard to not look at this and think Dragon Ball Z, the film.
Oof.
There were a lot of instances that I was like, Like you said, there were concepts that just went out the window. There were like, okay, if anybody who dies doesn't really die, then what's the point in the whole mat, in the whole tournament itself? What are the rules that everybody seems to be so keen on breaking for Mortal Kombat? And when the heck is Mortal Kombat? Like, I thought it was imminent, and apparently they got time to go all the way to California to go find someone else.
Also, okay, at a certain point, Raiden's like, okay, we need to go find the other people who are champions. And I'm like, why didn't you do that beforehand?
Yeah. Like, apparently Liu Kang was like, I was charged with finding the warriors. Well, you did a poor job there, buddy.
They failed you.
You literally walked out of the temple and said, I have found them. Because they already walked all this way that way.
That's like doing a group project. You did nothing. It's like, hey, I helped get this guy.
Like, no, you guys don't get it. I put my name right here. It was, and then okay. I'm gonna kind of state something that's a little unpopular, but I don't really care. Liu Kang just looked not like Liu Kang. He just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what the consideration was, but like I look at Liu Kang in every video game, and yes, it's not the same as the one from the very first one, but there is a sense of the shape and the way he looks and the way he, I mean, everybody in this movie looked super young for their characters except for Sonya Blade, Jax, and Kano. Like everybody else was like super young. Well, and except for Scorpion,
right.
But like you look at Cole, you look at Melina, you look at Kung Lao, you look at Liu Kang, even Shang Tsung looked a little young for his role. I don't know, man. It really does kind of take away from the opportunity here of seeing what you would hope to see from a video game adaptation, because if you're gonna youngify every single person when you make an adaptation, don't expect the amount of trust and recognition to be there when you're gonna mess that up anyway. It's like kind of like the whole, you know, with Avatar. Yes, we know people are all of all ages, whatever, but the characters from the very beginning of the game, I mean, you have police officers, you have Shaolin monks, you have all these people, and you're just like, let's make them all teenagers. Like, that's kind of where I was like, I don't want to say Dragon Ball Z here, but I mean, I'm kind of getting that vibe, you know? I don't know. There's a lot that happens within this movie, and it's not that they're not trying. I just think the biggest issue overall with video game movies, as well as this one, is kind of like what you said. There's no recognition of the amount of time that is invested. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say, oh, this has to be an 80 hour long movie.
Yeah.
What we're saying is you have to have the consideration that, okay, if this is an 80 hour video game, you have to be willing to take a chunk out of the beginning and establish the beginning. Don't take it and then like, all right, I'm going to take a piece from this one, I'm going to take a piece from the second one, third one, I'm going to take a piece all the way from the last one and then make it all work. It's like, no, that's not how this works. You can't do that. And I think that's the biggest issue here is, well, no, see, that's not even an issue here because I have no idea what the timeline is here. Like, It just doesn't make sense.
Like, it could be anything from, like, several days to several hours. And I believe most of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have no sense of time in this movie.
Yeah.
And I have no sense of time in terms of when Mortal Kombat is. And it's... I don't know. Yeah. And mind you, there's a lot... Like I said, going back to what I was first saying, with a lot of the fights, there's a lot of expectations that you're like, oh, this is going to happen, and it doesn't happen. Or, oh, they're going to go in this direction, and they don't go in that direction. So, yeah, I don't know, man. This one really does kind of put a damper on video game movies.
So it's kept with the trend is what I'm hearing.
Most indubitably, it definitely is kept with the trend. So wrapping things up, let's go ahead and go and talk about... you know, whether or not the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I'll let you go ahead and go first. That way you don't have the most hated review of the film.
Okay, so this is a hard one. Does this movie pass or fail? Like they did tell a story from start to finish. They skipped over a lot of the stuff, so technically, yes. There's so much missing logic for this movie for me. I just would like it to make more sense, really. When is Mortal Kombat? We've been talking about this around. No idea what it is. No idea when it's coming. And then I want to highlight something that I thought was ridiculous from this movie. Catchphrases.
Oh my gosh.
Flawless victory. Nobody says this when they win a fight.
Yeah, or you take somebody's heart out. Kano wins.
I'm not going to talk about Kano. Kano was my favorite character out of this movie.
He was good.
He was so ridiculous. I loved Kano.
I thought he was good.
But yeah, so just there was lots of weirdness. It was kind of goofy. I had fun, so there's something to say. But also, to my credit, I am not as heavily invested in the Mortal Kombat franchise as others are. So I'm going to give this a 2.5. It's watchable. If you're not heavily invested in Mortal Kombat, you'll be like, yeah, this is a movie. All right.
This is a movie. There you go. The one statement that has ruined so many different relationships. Oh, you should see this. It's just a movie. It's scarred for life.
Yeah. So, like, but if you have more of a heavier connotation with it, you probably know what's going to happen. So don't even bother.
Well, as for myself, the film does not pass for me. My biggest problem is that the continuity and chronological order of this film...
Mm-hmm. When is Mortal Kombat? Yes.
...is just thrown out the window.
Right.
As well as some of the story elements in terms of what could have created more engaging scenes or more more meaningful moments. Yeah, it didn't happen. So it falls flat for me in terms of story. So I'm going to fail it in terms of the film itself. It fails, and I'm going to give it a 2. Now, the reason why I'm going to give it a 2 is because I have to admit Kano was probably one of the better parts of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Kano.
Yeah.
He was funny. Everything he said, even if it was like just not appropriate at all, I appreciated it. and the second one is for Shang Tsung. The actor who played Shang Tsung, we've seen him in a lot of different things, and it's good seeing him playing roles such as this. I do hope it carries over for more films, and I do hope that there's as much Asian representation in most of these kinds of films nowadays, because we need more Asian people to represent themselves in their own culture of, you know, martial arts and so forth. So
yeah.
But yeah. And in terms of monocles, I'm going to give it, I think I said a 2.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, yeah, that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmphilosophers.com. Also, check us out on our website, on our Facebook page, on our socials at facebook.com/filmphilosophers, and on our Twitter and Instagram at filmphilosophy101. There you can check out all of our previous episodes, as well as engaging with us on those platforms. So we'd love to hear from you. This movie is one of those things that really sparks that conversation about proper video game adaptations. And I think the truth still stands that we have yet to receive a good video game adaptation film. So that's a little disheartening because of the fact that we grew up with video games. We are the essential, you know, kind of groundbreaking floor of that kind of generation. So
yeah,
this isn't, and mind you, this isn't to dissuade anybody from seeing it. If you want to check it out, get your own opinions by all means. But know that there's a standard essentially set when it comes to making a movie like this, especially when it's, whether if it's comic book based, if it's novel based, or video game. You're pulling from resources, you're pulling from content that's already been established, that people have already fallen in love with. You can't mess with the formula for that too much to where it becomes unrecognizable for the people who love it. So, but that's all I'm going to say about that. Because, like I said, that's a conversation for another episode and a much bigger conversation. We'll need more bigger brains in that realm to kind of help us bat that around. So, but yeah, this was a great episode. We can't wait to connect with you again. And yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
So, from all of us here at the Filmphilosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.